tell the truth faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. And we all know that the truth will set you free, but the question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? We deal every week with mental health issues from a more holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit, in terms of finding a balance between how we interact, how we are conscious of what's going on physically, emotionally, spiritually, and how we are being honest and telling the truth faster, so that we are not keeping ourselves and those aspects of us separate, but are integrating ourselves into a complete being, an empowered being, a grounded being, a being that comes from a true heart space, so that in our communications we are speaking from the heart and listening from the heart. And basically that's what today's show is going to be about. I do not have a guest on this week. So I am asking my listeners out there to call in and be my guest, and be my guest to call in. The topic of today's show is one that I actually used to do very regularly, and I realized when I looked through the list of topics I've done, I haven't done this since last April, and the topic today is intimacy and relationships. Intimacy and relationships. Now, the live call-in number, if you're in the Phoenix area or if you're listening via the internet in other cities, is still the same number. It's 480-949-1310, 480-949-1310. For those of you who are listening last week, you heard me have an incredible conversation with Mark Vicente, who's the director of What the Bleep Do We Know. And for those of you who called in, your DVDs are on their way, I promise you. It took a while to get the DVDs and the addresses in the same location. So they've been packed and shipped, and so you should get them within, let's say, 3 to 4 days. So enjoy them, and I want to thank you for making those phone calls last week. You were the ones that made the show what it was. Your questions were good, and it was great to see that kind of interest. So I'm hoping that as I am speaking about relationships and the issue of intimacy, which obviously is something all of us can relate to, that some of you may have questions or be going through something in a particular relationship or see a pattern that you've experienced that you want to call in and discuss and maybe get some help with, that's what I love doing, okay? Now, intimacy. When I say that word, most people get some kind of physical reaction. And to me, that is an example, a prime example of holistic stuff. You hear a word. You are hearing something that may be a very neutral word, but your body reacts. Your body reacts because there's a meaning associated with that word, and you are connecting with memories or experiences, and so your body physically has a reaction to that word intimacy, or maybe the word relationships. So if you listen to your body and you say, gee, why do I have that knot in my stomach or that lump in my throat, that's listening to the body, that there is an emotion attached to that. And as long as you're not dealing with it, it means you're creating some semblance of separation. So spiritually, you're disconnected. And there's the body-mind-spirit connection. Now, intimacy and relationships. If you've seen my website, there's one quote from a guy named Dan from Phoenix who wrote to me probably about a year ago, and it said, anyway, your show was also interesting because I never received dating tips from a gay man. Not that there is anything wrong with that. It was just different but true. It actually made me look at gay relationships in a more warm and sympathetic way, if that makes sense. To be quite honest, I guess I never realized that when someone is gay, they would have the same struggles in a relationship as folks that are not. That, to me, is the essence of what humanity is about, is realizing that we're all in the same struggles, no matter whether we're gay, straight, bisexual, lesbian, transgender, whatever, men or women. It doesn't matter. All of us have been programmed in many ways about what relationships is, about what intimacy is about. And unfortunately for most of us, most of that programming came from role models that didn't quite know how to do it themselves. So most of us find ourselves as adolescents or adults struggling, trying to figure it out. So that's what today's program is going to be about, is kind of help us all, and I say all, meaning myself, because I'm a work in progress too, maybe get some understanding or solution, or at least some additional insight that will add to our body of knowledge so that we can take our own relationships and our own motivation in having relationships to a higher level. Now, with all that being said, when I talk about relationships, I'm not necessarily just talking about relationships with a significant other. One of my friends and teachers, Sandra Ray, in her book, Loving Relationships, which was actually written a while back, talks about relationships in the sense that we're in relationship with everything and everyone, whether we know them or not or whatever, whether it's animate or inanimate. Okay, we have relationships with our parents, with siblings. We're in relationship with friends. We're in relationship with our body. We're in relationship with our career. We're in relationship with money and prosperity. We're in relationship with the environment. We're in relationship with our home, our bedroom, our belongings. We're in relationship with everything and everyone. So when she talks about relationships, she's talking about the fact that very often the patterns and belief systems that we hold to often reflect similarly through all those relationships, okay? Or we may really excel in certain areas, but relationships with other things, like we may have our career stuff totally together, but that's a safe place because we're not as intimate with our career in many cases, and yet we can't seem to manage to have a significant other in our lives at work and where we feel safe and comfortable and honest and upfront. So that doesn't mean we're not having an intimate relationship with our career. We may have a very empowered, successful relationship, but if that's all of our life and there's no human contact that takes us deeper, then something usually is felt like it's missing. So when we're talking about relationships, the things that we talk about today, you can apply to all aspects of your life. Okay? Why do some of us constantly have cars that are breaking down? Why do some of us constantly are at the doctors because our bodies are breaking down? Why are we so unable to keep ourselves healthy and take better care of ourselves through exercise or diet or just attitude about how we exist in life and its impact on our bodies? Why do some of us have very successful careers and yet still have problems with money? Where is that intimate connection with money coming from? What are the belief systems? What are the things we've been taught about it? Okay, so now, with all that being said, we also have a relationship, for better or worse, or however we approach it, with whatever we call a higher power, God, spirit, love, whatever we feel comfortable defining that aspect as. Okay, with the next level here is for me to define intimacy, because I think that my definition of intimacy, which I've used in workshops for many years, is a good frame of reference. It's a good framework to continue this conversation. So I define intimacy as an expression of our natural desire for connection. I'm going to say it a few times. Intimacy is an expression of our natural desire for connection. An expression of our natural desire for connection. If you think of these words, the key words to me are natural and connection. Okay? Think of yourself in the womb. The most natural, intense connection we've ever had with another human being was when we were in the womb, attached to the umbilical cord to our mother, her central nervous system, it was our feeding tube, and when she was happy, we were feeling it. When she was sad, we were feeling it. When she was hungry, we were feeling it. But there was this constant connection, and that's as intimate as any of us can ever experience. And yet when we're born and we come out of that womb, that umbilical cord is cut, and many of us spend the rest of our lives trying to get back inside there, trying to get that natural connection, that cord connection. If you think even what sex looks like, sex is often for most of us about getting back inside someone else or someone getting back inside us. So there is that need to get back to that womb-like umbilical connection. And it's not appropriate. Okay? We need to separate at a certain point from that kind of connection and realize that that umbilical connection in a physical form is not necessarily what serves us. But if you think of the umbilical connection in a spiritual sense, in a higher sense, then you could see that a healthy relationship with another human being can be that deep and that intimate, but not necessarily that physical. That's why some people who feel such an intense love for another person, and yet geographically they're nowhere near, and yet they are constantly feeling that connection, that sense of what they're going through, who they are, you know, it's like, oh my God, I need to call them, and you call them and find out that you got that hit because something was going on and they really needed to talk to you. To me, that's like the emotional and spiritual umbilical connection that actually can be very healthy and very desirable. It's about taking a relationship to that level of intimate connection. So, again, natural desire. The natural desire comes from the fact that at one point we felt how natural it was to have that kind of deep connection. The other key word being connection. So all of us who have been hurt, who have been abused, who have, been abandoned, we fear, very often we've developed now a fear of that connection, because our assumption is as soon as we get that connection, is if we let it in, they're going to leave us, they're going to hurt us. So we now are in that place where we desire the connection because it's just the natural expression of who we are, but at the same point we're afraid of it, so we're in that netherland. And very often, we find ourselves, if you think about the patterns that you've had, very often if you've had a dysfunctional relationship and you haven't healed what it was about for you, you keep attracting the same person in different bodies over and over again. Or for some people, they keep going back to that same abusive or distant and disconnected individual, hoping that somehow this time it's going to be different in some way. And it never is, because the work hasn't been done yet. So what we're talking about here today is getting the work done. Becoming conscious. Remember the name of the show, Tell the Truth Faster. All right? How many of you have acknowledged that you are in a relationship that really is destructive, that does not feed you, that does not nurture you? How many of you can be honest enough about it and maybe have never really admitted that before? For most people, it's because they really, once they do that, they don't know where to go with it. They don't know what to do next with it. So they stay stuck. It's like you very often hear about women who are being physically abused who stay, or who keep coming back just because the guy has promised never to do it again, but they know that promise has been made 20 times and it will always happen again, but they keep going back. And most people don't realize, but in gay and lesbian relationships, the issue of physical abuse is also rampant. And the dynamics are very much the same. So if we're telling the truth faster, how many of you at this point, even between you and your higher power, you and what's going on inside your mind, can admit right now that honestly, the relationship you're in does not serve you. Or if you're telling the truth faster and you're not in a relationship, how honest can you get as to what it is that you're protecting yourself from or you're afraid of in terms of getting close? Or maybe your self-esteem is so low that you don't want to find out that if you attempt to get into a relationship with someone, you're going to find out that they see all the horrible stuff that you see about yourself. So rather than risk it, you keep yourself alone and depressed, and maybe you're drinking, or maybe you're just whining about it constantly and doing nothing about it, nothing to heal the process. So we've defined intimacy. We've talked about telling the truth about the state of your own relationship. Okay? Now, again, there are a lot of reasons for the state of that relationship. And we're very often surprised. I mean, I have clients. I mean, my private practice is in Los Angeles in the Hollywood area. I have some celebrity clients. I have clients that are models or actors, actresses. I have clients that spend hours at the gym, look incredible, but their self-esteem is such that they still look in the mirror and don't see what everybody else sees, which is maybe that perfectly defined body or that face that anybody would love to have. And most of us think that if we only had that body, only had that handsome or beautiful face, we'd have it made. And most of us assume that those actors that have the fame and the fortune and all the accolade and our love, even though we really don't know those people, that they have it all together. So we're often shocked when Brad and Jen get married and we think they're having this fairy tale relationship and they split up. Or River Phoenix ends up on the sidewalk outside the Viper Room dead because of an overdose. And we're constantly shocked, and I don't know why we're constantly shocked, because people of celebrity are humans just like the rest of us. They have their issues just like the rest of us. They have the added struggle of being in the public eye constantly or having to live up to expectations that nobody can live up to. So now take a look at your own life. What are the expectations? You know, maybe you're not the gym bunny. Maybe you're not a model. Maybe you are very attractive but don't get it. Or maybe you are but don't know what to do with it. Maybe you see yourself as just a very average person or an ugly person or whatever. What are the self-esteem issues that you're going through? What are the expectations that have been laid on you? What are the expectations that have been laid on you to the point where they keep you frozen? They keep you from actually creating intimacy, creating really loving relationships in your life, and in particular a significant loving relationship, a husband, wife, lover, partner, whatever you want to call it. Okay? Now, I know for myself, I'm single, and here I am talking about relationships, and you say, well, how can you really advise us on relationships if you're single? Well, I'm constantly striving. I have a lot of loving relationships in my life, just not a significant one at this point. And I realized at a certain point a while back that I bought into the level of expectations everyone else put on me. You know, I'm the kind person, I'm the caregiver, I'm the one that people can always count on. So it was easy for me to hide behind that mask. It was easy for me to take in that acknowledgement and love, even though I didn't necessarily believe I was worthy of it. This is something that has come up repeatedly for me and something I've had to work through over and over again. Just because you get it once doesn't mean it's not still playing out. Think of what patterns are like. Patterns are things that got developed very early on for the most part and keep repeating themselves. And they become patterns and belief systems usually on a very subconscious level. We're not even aware they exist until we start getting honest about it, until we start digging, or until we start seeing the same thing happening over and over again. That's what a pattern is. And a dysfunctional pattern is we keep seeing or creating the same thing over and over again, somehow thinking that it's going to be different this next time, and it never is, and, you know, we're constantly dumbfounded or angry with ourselves that here we've done it again. That's what a pattern is. So if you could take a look at just one thing, maybe there's someone out there that wants to call in and talk about one of the patterns they see, or they're trying to get some clarity on a particular struggle that I can help them with, I remind you that the phone number is 480-949-1310. But even if you don't call in, everyone out there listening can think of a pattern that you have going in relationships somewhere in your life that prevents you from getting into relationships, or that you keep repeating in relationships that keep intimacy from truly expressing itself, that keep you from finding a real peaceful place to go in the context of relationship and opening your heart. Now get honest, tell the truth faster. What is that pattern? Even if you can't label it, get honest about what the behavior is. Now think about a time recently or in the past where that played out, where it was a communication issue, or you found yourself alone and unhappy, or you know, a repeated thing where all of a sudden you're the bad guy or girl and you don't understand where all of this came up from again. What is that feeling? How did it make you feel? What was the emotion that got triggered when that, whatever situation you're thinking of, happened? I know that if you're thinking about it right now, you're feeling it if you let yourself. So connect the memory with the thought, with the physical emotion that's being triggered. And from there, allow yourself to go back to the earliest memory you have of that same feeling. What we're doing here is a little tool, a little technique to help you find as close as you can the origins of some of these behavior patterns, some of the belief systems. The first time you felt a certain way, the first time you were treated a certain way. And as you go back there to that first time you were treated a certain way, or somebody communicated to something about you that was critical, that was hurtful, what did you decide about yourself? How did you translate that into something's wrong with me? Maybe what you decided about yourself was I'm not lovable. Maybe what you decided about yourself is I'm not good enough. Maybe what you decided about yourself is I'm not pretty or handsome enough to attract somebody. Maybe what you decided about yourself is people leave me. Maybe what you decided about yourself is if someone really gets to know me, it's going to hurt. That the more I let somebody see who I am, the more material I give them to abuse me, hurt me, and I will never be vulnerable again. Maybe that's where you shut down. I will never be vulnerable again. So now you built this wall. I remember being so in love in college with my roommate. And, you know, I'd just come out, and these were some of the issues that I was dealing with, and yet we were very close friends before anything else happened between us. And long story short, you know, it was an experiment for him. He ended up with somebody else and lying to me, and I found out the hard way, and it was totally devastating. And I remember being in the infirmary on campus, and I remember floating above my body, looking down at me in total pain, and I felt myself losing myself. This is a story I've told often, so I'm not shy about telling it. And I remember to this day having the thought, pull yourself together, Stuart, or they're going to lock you away. And I remember coming back into my body, and I remember putting a lock and key on me. They didn't have to lock me away. I locked myself away. And on a certain level, I remembered that experience for a long time, but I never connected me being single for a long time after that with that belief system that if I let someone in, they're going to hurt me, they're going to abandon me. So what I did for a long time is I kept myself alone, did my work, had a lot of accolades from a lot of people for who I am and what I was, but was alone the whole time in terms of intimate relationship.
Stuart?
Yes.
It's Robert back at the studios here. You have a caller. Her name is S, and she's calling from Scottsdale.
Her name is?
S. She has, all she wants to say is S.
X. Okay. X, you on the line?
Hello?
Hi.
Just very quickly, you know what? I'm 60 years old, and I just had an oh-my-God moment when I was listening to you.
Excellent. What was it?
Hello?
Yes. What was the aha?
Well, I'm 60. I'm single. I've been married twice. I have always wanted a relationship, but I've never been able to form one. And I couldn't figure out why, and I recognize that I've had this wall that I built up, and as much as I want it, I don't let anybody in, okay?
Uh-huh.
Well, when you were talking about this umbilical connection, blah, 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 you know, that you know, that's where you have the need. I believe, which is why I don't want to give my name, I believe it started with my mother and then the people around me. She was not loving mm-hmm. at all. She was cold. She took care of us beautifully, but no love. I had a grandmother who rejected me, a father who was busy. And that's all I had. Then I married somebody who grew up essentially the same way, and so we never connected spiritually or emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So is that, have I got it?
That's exactly what I was talking about. And the beauty of it is you now see the connectedness with your need to protect yourself, your need to not trust people. You know, like
right,
you said, you had a
right.
mother that was cold, a grandmother that didn't take care of you, a dad that was too busy. So what was the belief that you formed as a child about relationship?
Well, first of all, the grandmother wasn't that she didn't take care of me. She just out and out didn't love us, and she told me why. You know, I wasn't just a lot of stuff. You know, she just out and told me, and I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't. And then a mother who, when we were infants, she said the best way that she knew to get her work done was to put us down to bed and swat us, you know, and we'd cry ourselves to sleep. And that was the modus operandi, you know, just a good swat. And so I learned not to cry very early so that I wouldn't get swatted. And so the protectiveness. Now, the problem is I sort of feel like that at 60, it's too late for me to learn anything new. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to hang up and then listen to you on the radio. Is that all right?
Okay, I want to say some things to you first before you hang up, if you're okay with that.
Sure.
Okay. The important thing is, number one, that you identify the belief about yourself that grew out of that type of treatment. It may be I'm unlovable. It may be that...
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. I hate myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the reason you hate yourself may be because you believe you're unlovable because
I'm
everybody
unlovable,
treated
yes.
you that way.
Pardon?
Because everybody treated you that
because
way.
Because I was treated that way. And then at one point when I was still very little, I had an older sister who died who was supposed to be very beautiful, very everything. And she died at the age of 6 months and I was born on her same birthday.
Wow.
Exactly a year later, and my mother at one point was so angry with me, she told me that she wished that I had died instead of her.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I try to forget that, but that's always, you know, that tape, you know?
So you lived in the world, and the negative thing that about you was that you weren't your sister.
Probably, yeah, I wasn't her, and I wasn't lovable.
Okay, but you weren't lovable because you weren't her. They were still grieving her loss and took it out on you.
She was beautiful. She was everything that I was not and was never going to be.
Okay. So you made a statement a little while ago that I really, really want you to hear what I'm going to say to you. All right? I've had clients in their 60s, 70s, and 80s come into therapy and change and heal these things. I really want you, because you have a belief that it's too late for me.
Yeah.
Okay? If you really believe that, you would not have called into me right now. On a certain level, you were hearing me, and I was touching something, and it was a place that you hadn't touched for a while.
Maybe
and that is a way of saying you're still ready. You're ready to change. You're capable of changing.
Well,
you just need
yes.
the help. And you want to. Say that again.
Yes, I want to.
Say it again. I want to change.
I want to change.
Say it again.
I want to change.
And now say, and I know I can change.
And I know I can. And but you said something very important, that it doesn't happen just because you believe it and because you understand and you realize you have to work at it.
Right. So my next comment to you is that you live in Scottsdale. There are therapists
yes.
locally, and there are some that actually specialize in working with people over 50 or 60.
Uh-huh.
People who are reassessing their lives, people who are making changes in their lives because of retirement or because of empty nest or whatever's going on, there are people there that will specialize in that. And if we can do one of two things here, you could either start asking around for a good therapist that you can start seeing, okay? And then I would like you to, if you, do you have email?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. If you go to my website, you can email me and say, Stuart, this is X. I spoke to you on the show and I found a therapist. I'd like to know that you did that.
Okay.
And if you had difficulty finding one, then you email me that and I will do some research and I'll help you find someone that you can work with there locally, okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
You promise you're going to do that?
I promise.
Okay. I'm so glad you called in. And the key here is it's never too late.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So, if you've been listening to this, and you've been listening to what my caller just shared, I think it's the most fundamental belief is most of us have this feeling that it's too late for us. And I've spoken with people in their 20s who just said, you know, it's like I've been like this, you know, it's hopeless, I can't change. I had a couple that I was seeing this morning, it happened to be a gay couple, and I've known them now for about 6 months. One of them has a job outside LA, so that they see each other mostly on weekends, but they've actually known each other for about 8 years and have been in a relationship for 8 years. Well, tell the truth faster, right? Well, one of them occasionally has been unfaithful. So think about what happens if you're holding on to a secret like that and the other person is just loving you unconditionally and really has the ability to understand and accept. But because of religious issues, the one that has been unfaithful has this belief system that God doesn't love me because I'm a homosexual, that has this belief system that my family will not or cannot accept me, even though a couple of them know. And so there's this whole issue of it's too late for me. I'm already damned or I'm already determined unlovable. So even though there's somebody in his life that loves him unconditionally and is able to forgive and move on, there is this really, you don't have to be 60 or 70 to have the belief that change is impossible. It took a while of working with him to help him acknowledge the fact that change is possible. But what a lot of people get into is, well, it's going to take forever, so what's the point? So, you know what? It will take some work, and it will be uncomfortable. That's what therapy does for people. It is uncomfortable. Anytime you try on a new shoe, sometimes it's uncomfortable for a while. Anytime you're asked to start getting into places that you have developed the skills to lock away and not deal with, it's going to be uncomfortable. It might even be painful. I have never, in my 30 years of being in practice, has never seen anybody die from accessing that pain. I have seen people die prematurely because they've repressed it and spent their lives avoiding it. They've died out of sadness. They've died because the body just gets worn down, holding on to secrets and hiding in darkness. Literally. So I really, first of all, it took courage for X to call in. It was great that she was so excited about getting the connection. That's what this show's all about. That's what, to me, the transformational work that occurs when you get into therapy or find some kind of healing process, that's the excitement of all of a sudden, oh, my God, I finally realized that. I see that now. I haven't seen that before or I haven't wanted to see it before, and all of a sudden you can't avoid it. So I really value the fact, number one, that she was listening, that she got the connection, and she had the courage, and it's beyond courage because you could hear the excitement in her voice that she got the connection. She figured something out. To me as a therapist and as a radio talk show host, I'm excited that I got a call like that, that she heard something that was said here and the light bulb went off and she shared it. And the important thing about telling the truth faster, it's not just about telling the truth faster about the uncomfortable stuff, but it's also about telling the truth faster about what's exciting you, what the new stuff is about. And what she did was she reinforced the awareness and the enthusiasm by picking up the phone and calling and sharing it with all of us. That's just as important as being honest about the struggles and the pain and the secrets that have been kept. It reinforces the growth when you talk about it. It reinforces the growth and the excitement around it when you share it with anyone. And you never know. She doesn't know who else she may have touched who's listening in, who doesn't want to call or is too uncomfortable calling, or who's too engaged in listening to all this and is getting a lot of stuff. She doesn't know that by her call, she may have motivated or excited or resonated with somebody else listening in. So I want to thank her again. My caller X. I love that. Anyway, so if we're looking at the core, remember I had you when she called, I had you actually remember a situation and go back to the origin, the first time you had a connection with it. The important thing, and like what I did with her, was what belief did you form about yourself or about relationships that you're still believing and acting out on even after 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years? Or maybe it's something that's happened recently. It's important that you really take an honest look at what the belief systems were that you formed around that trauma or around a particular communication or around something that let you down or criticized you. So, again, you know, I was talking about separating out of my body and saying to myself, pull yourself together, they're going to lock you away. And I realized that 10 years later, that moment, I decided to lock myself away and not let anybody close and not let anybody in. And that was one of those awakening moments that I realized what I had decided and the impact it had on me. Now, what's the solution for that? The solution ultimately is forgiveness. The solution ultimately is letting go. And forgiveness doesn't mean that you go back to the abusive person. Forgiveness, to me, means, as if you listen to a show I did a couple of weeks ago on the power of forgiveness with David Ault, and you can listen to it in my archives if you want more information on forgiveness. Forgiveness is just getting to a point where there's a neutral reaction when you think about it, that you realize maybe that the person that said something to you or did something to you was someone who themselves was in pain and just acting out on their own patterns, that you stop taking it so personally and you move on. And moving on means that you're able to engage in new relationships without those messages dictating who you are and what you do in the context of this next relationship. It doesn't mean if somebody's been abusing you, you forgive them and you go back into the abuse. It doesn't mean if somebody is really not serving and supporting you that you forgive them and you go back and not have something nurturing and a strong enough reason to be present in that relationship. Okay, so the ultimate goal in all this, like with X's call, is she really does the work, and I really believe she's ready to now. All right? Is at a certain point, there's going to have to be a certain level of forgiveness with her mom, with her grandmother, with her dad, even, if you want to think about that, with her dead sister. Because the little girl that she was getting these messages also became very angry with the sister that died before she was born for being so pretty, for setting the bar so high, for leaving so that her parents carried that grief over and made it impossible for them to have a healthy relationship with her. Now, there's no shame in the fact that there's a little girl inside there that's angry with a dead sister. Many of us have issues with dead people who have died even before we were born because it helped create family patterns. And there's no shame even in dealing with somebody who has passed away that you're angry with and love at the same time. In fact, there's more power and more issues attached to people that we actually love, that we're angry with, and we can't rectify the anger and the love in the same place. So we choose not to deal with the anger at all because somehow we figure we're dishonoring the love that we feel for them. Does that make any sense to you? Of course it does. So, if we take a look now at a whole nother issue that has to do with intimacy, and that's one that most people love to deal with and love to avoid and maybe love to overdo, and that has to do with sex and intimacy. Now, sex for many people is an escape from intimacy. We may think that it is an intimate thing. We may think that having sex means we have intimacy. But all of us, and I challenge any of you to say to me, that there hasn't been some time when you've had sex with someone that you weren't there or it was not an intimate experience, even with someone that you loved. Maybe you're uncomfortable. Maybe you really weren't in the mood, so you were just going through because you didn't know how to say no and set boundaries. But there are many times for most of us where sex is sex and it's not about intimacy and love. There are many times for many people where there's a great deal of intimacy and sex is just another way of expressing that. Sex can also happen in a very compulsive manner, very much like an addiction, as a way of numbing ourselves or as a way of not feeling good about ourselves so that we are looking for people to find us attractive because momentarily that makes us feel better about ourselves. Now, with intimacy and sex, another thing that a lot of people confuse is that we are looking for the orgasm. And with orgasm, again, if we think the orgasm's the goal of our intimate expression through sexuality, we're missing out on a lot of good stuff. The foreplay, the touching, the holding, the kissing, the exploring, the eye contact. Too many people think that if they don't have orgasm, they haven't had a satisfying experience. Now, of course, the orgasm releases a lot of the sexual energy that may be escalating during the contact and stuff. There's nothing wrong with orgasm. It's wonderful. If you can achieve it, and there are people who say they can't achieve it. So orgasm for many people is the ultimate invulnerability. It's that one moment where all of a sudden all defenses and all inhibitions are dropped, because when you're in orgasm, you're totally out of control. You are not controlling anything. And so for many people, once they have that orgasm, they get scared because they're now in such a vulnerable, open place that they either need to get up and leave, or they roll over and don't want to interact instead of rolling over and cuddling after that, or having some kind of close visual contact. So for a lot of people, they cannot handle having that orgasm, feeling that level of vulnerability, when actually that's a moment where you can be practicing really connecting with another human being. Okay? So I challenge you, the next time you are actually having sex or making love with somebody that you know have a relationship with, and if your pattern is trying to disconnect immediately after orgasm, I challenge you not to. I challenge you, even if it's uncomfortable, while you're laying there, talk to your partner about how uncomfortable this is and negotiate with them, saying, look, you know that this is what goes on here. I'd like for us to get past it. I'd like to get past it. So even though it may seem strange, once we orgasm, let's lay there and let's talk about it. Let me see what memories come up. Let me see what the history looks like there. Take a risk. If your partner really loves you, they won't see that as strange, or even if it's awkward, they'll be willing to support you in that. And again, these are issues that are irrelevant to your sexual orientation. These are issues that cross the gamut of the Kinsey scale, if you want to look at it that way. So, intimacy and sex, it's a whole other arena. We can have an intimate relationship that has nothing to do with sexuality. It could be platonic. It could be with our boss or an employee. It could be, like I said, with an organization that you're a part of, where you do volunteer work. Okay, intimacy comes up on a lot of levels. But intimacy and sex, in the highest form of relationship, comes where there is a connection that's loving and that's heart space. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with healthy, casual sexual interaction. Okay? For some people, that can be more or less the little kid in them coming out to play. But if that's the only way you know how to do it, then there's a problem. If it's the only way you know how to get sexual gratification, then there's a problem with intimacy issues. Then you need to look at the pattern. Then you need to look at why you're hiding behind these anonymous sexual contacts or the quick type of fixes. And you need to look at whether it's actually an addiction issue, very much like someone numbing by drinking or doing drugs or shopping or eating. And again, if you look at my archives, I've done a couple of shows on sex addiction, on cyber sex addiction. There are a lot of ways we numb when we actually think we're looking for connection and intimacy. Because when you're doing that anonymous stuff, basically it's about fantasy. That doesn't mean, I mean, I've had some anonymous sexual contacts that were some of the highest intimate experiences I've ever had, you know, in years past, where there really was a connection, where we may have just met, but there was this kind of like soul connection, this energy connection, and it took even that brief encounter to a very high place. But I also know in my own life that's the exception more than a rule. So explore it. Be honest with yourself. Tell the truth faster about what it is you're looking for and how it is you're going about it. And if you know it's not really satisfied you, if it's not really brought you to the place you really need to get, then maybe it's not really working for you, and you need to get honest about that and stop justifying it. Now, on a whole nother level, when we deal with sex, we also are dealing with a whole nother thing about HIV and AIDS and sexually transmitted diseases, you know, and I'm going to actually read something from a article I wrote, which you can actually see on my website, under the on the page of articles. It's called Intimacy and Relationships. So I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs to you because I think it's a good way to kind of close the show today. The epidemic of low self-esteem has been eating away at the internal organs of people in this country for a long time. It is easy to blame parents, religions, governments, and almost anything outside ourselves, but blame is not the answer. This victim consciousness is as destructive a form of abuse as any abusive mate or parent we choose to stay with. A person who learns to treat themselves with love, compassion, and respect will, I believe, create a position in society that will invite the same treatment from others and give us the confidence to remove ourselves from situations that do not allow intimacy. Now, as far as the other issue about AIDS and stuff, I write, in the age of AIDS, all conscious human beings are being forced to examine their thoughts, feelings, and behavioral patterns about relationships and sex. Most people I know, when they finally start exploring these areas, find at least a sense of dissatisfaction, if not total disgust in themselves and their sexual and relationship history. For many, it seems easier to deny these problems and continue seeking bodies for sex and unfulfilling relationships. For these individuals, the answer truly may be eroticizing safer sex and condom use to at least save their lives and the lives of their partners. To only focus on the mechanics of sexual activity, however, is a crime against all of society and an opportunistic infection worse than pneumocystis. To me, more than anything, the most important level of intimacy is learning to tell the truth faster, moving through the fears, anger, and discomfort by realizing them quickly is a tool that keeps us clear and more in present time and always connected. What I have described is beyond sex. It is making love. Sex is just one way of making love. Expressing our natural desire for connection, making love in any form, creates a sense of union instead of separation. When a person is willing to see it as such, this moving towards a deeper state of intimacy or union in one's life, it allows for a deeper spiritual connection. It brings a deeper sense of peace, a more profound sense of safety, and returns us to a familiar time of innocence. A time when we were newborn before the fearful adults around us had time to impose their limits on a child's natural connection with spirit. We have never lost this, and it is not so hard to reconnect with it. It only takes willingness to start the learning process. Now, my caller, X, showed a willingness to start the learning process by allowing her awareness to trigger the connection and a greater understanding by allowing her awareness to take it to the point of calling into process, by allowing her awareness to hear my suggestion that she is not too old to change this, and to allow that awareness to seek a therapist locally in her area, and to get my help in doing that if she can't find one herself. My mother is 83 years old, and she has been in a relationship, I think, for the last 6 or 7 years with somebody who is 89 years old now. So he was in his early 80s, she was in her mid-70s when they met. They're like high school sweethearts. They have a healthy relationship, a loving relationship, an attentive relationship, and they're an inspiration. So nobody can tell me it's too late, ever. If my mom can do it in her 70s and 80s, and this guy that she's with, Tony, can do it in his 80s and almost 90, anything is possible. And I want to leave you with that thought. This is Stuart Altschuler. You've been listening to Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix. And I invite you all to listen again next week and every week, and I look forward to your calls and your emails. You can listen to all the archive shows, including last week's one on What the Bleep, is now up on the archives at TellTheTruthFaster.com. Thank you for listening.